Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Happy Thursday night, everybody. I know some people were, we had a question, John, where were you Wednesday night? You got to keep up with the new show schedule that we unveiled for you. We're doing Mondays, we're doing Thursdays, we're doing a little bit of Fridays, we're doing some post-game stuff Sunday. We're bringing you a lot of different stuff on the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. We've got a big, big episode for you tonight because we are joined by a very special guest to help us preview a gigantic game. I'm Anthony Cazenza. And that guy over there is John Sheeran. John, how you doing tonight, buddy?
Doing well, man. It seems like now we're recording on every day except Wednesday. So yeah, you guys are living in November. You got to get up to December, catch up to speed.
You got to catch up. And catching us up is a great guest that joined us for to help preview the AFC Championship game last year. And we had such an awesome time talking with him. We were looking forward to this week. Really weeks ago, hoping that he would be available to come talk to us about this game and hoping that both teams would have a great schedule. He's a former Kansas City offensive lineman. He is now a co-host of the Believe in Chiefs podcast. Mr. Joe Valerio joining the program. Mr. Valerio, how you doing? You changed venues and on us since you joined us.
Since I couldn't get the audio working, and that is to all your listeners and followers, that was my fault. Couldn't get my audio working. It delayed us a little bit, but I wanted to at least get a good background for you if I couldn't get the audio working as well as it should be. So I'm doing great, Anthony and John. I hope you guys are doing well. I hope you and your fans are as excited about I am for this game. I think it's going to be a fantastic matchup. And it's probably one, NFL players and most athletes, don't believe in looking past teams. I lived under the Marty Schottenheimer era, and as I know as Ohioans, that you probably are familiar with Coach Schottenheimer and his brand of football. And, he was the guy that always said, the most important game is your next game. However, I have to admit, and these guys are all human, right? There's a lot of Chiefs that have had this game circled on their calendar, regardless of how long away it was or how far away it may have seemed. They had to have been circling this. I know as a human being and as a competitor, I probably would have myself, after what happened in the AFC Championship game and in the regular season game as well.
Well, you talked when you joined us, I guess it was earlier this year, technically, when you joined us, I think you had predicted a Chiefs win, and I think most folks would have agreed with you at that point in time. I guess your reaction to what actually occurred in that game, I mean, I think the most surprising thing, especially you being an offensive lineman, was the offensive line performance by the Bengals in that one that they kind of held up, given what happened the previous week against the Titans. So, I don't know, I guess your surprise level at the result of that game and just how far the Bengals ended up making it throughout that entire year.
Well, yeah, I mean, you obviously history is always what you're looking at, right? You're looking at history. And if the Chiefs were watching film, and of course, you're always going to watch the last game. And I think the Titans and the Chiefs defense were similar. I don't know if they were too similar, but they were relatively similar. And they had to be thinking, God, with that performance, we're going to be all over Joe Burrow, right? And it didn't happen. And the line stepped up. So, hats off to them. And I think most importantly, my reaction to that game and, while I do, cover the Chiefs, I play for the Chiefs. I don't consider myself a homer. I predicted the Chiefs to lose to the Bills several times when they have, and not pat myself on the back that I'm some great prognosticator, but you know, I'm pretty objective too. And you have to be, right. Even though I'm a fan as well, right. Of the Chiefs, but you know, I think on paper, I think most people were thinking, you know, the Chiefs were going to be able to beat the Bengals that day unless something happened. However, I've got to give incredible amount of credit to defensive coordinator of the Bengals, because I thought what he did in the second half of that game was absolutely masterful, right? They didn't back down from Patrick Mahomes and the vaunted, you know, receiving core that they had last year, the way they were all playing. You know, they used the lack of momentum of that end of first half, you know, snafu with, you know, going for it and not going for the 3 points. And I'm telling you, there must have been some light bulbs going off in the locker room at that halftime adjustment period, because I thought it was brilliant to drop 8 in coverage, to rush 3, to make the Chiefs force themselves to try to commit to some kind of a run game by rushing 3, which they never did. And it just felt like there were, I don't know. I mean, it just felt like there were more Bengals out on the field than there were Chiefs on defense during the second half of that game. So hats off, man. I thought it was a brilliant piece of coaching. And of course, an incredible effort by the offensive line that really, I think, were the two turning points in that game.
So just staying with that game real quick. Joe Burrow said earlier this week, I believe it was his press conference, he was asked about, you know, quarterback matchups, and like, it's the media always paints it being quarterback versus quarterback, and Burrow's like, no, well, yeah, but it's really the quarterback versus the defense. And after that game, there was so much discourse about, did Patrick Mahomes choke, and did he not play as well as Joe Burrow, and whatever, I mean, on and on and on. Like, how did you react to basically that fallout? Like, because you said yourself, like, Lou and Arumo, incredible job, you know, adjusting the second half. Like, how did you react to the whole Mahomes discourse about that second half performance?
Well, yeah, real quick, John, I'll go to your comment. Whenever anybody talks about quarterback matchups, I always go back to a quote, and this is related but not unrelated, or it's unrelated but also related. Tiger Woods, I remember once when he and like Rory McIlroy were really going at it, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was those two, and they were interviewing Tiger Woods, and I'm paraphrasing. They were like, well, Tiger, you know, what do you think about this big matchup with Rory? He's like, wait a minute, hold on. He goes, it's not like we go out on the 18th green and hit each other with our clubs, right? We're playing golf against the hole. We're playing against the ball, the course, ourselves, right? And that's what I always think about, that comment that Tiger made, when I think about these quarterback matchups, because it's not like they're putting Joe Burrow and Patrick Mahomes on the 50-yard line and saying, all right, hit the crossbar. All right, first guy to hit the crossbar wins. Like, it's not, you know, so those kind of things are always funny to me. And I'm glad you kind of brought that up, John, because it, you know, and you kind of recognize that as well. They're not playing against each other. Now, however, I will say that quarterbacks do feed off each other. I know that for a fact. I mean, I watched it with guys like, you know, with Joe Montana when we had the Elway shootout on Monday night back in 1993. I think about the 94 game, Joe Montana against Steve Young. You know, they do feed off of each other. While they're not playing against each other, I think there's a level of, you know, competitiveness with these guys that they will change their game a little bit depending on what the other quarterback's doing. You know, some of it's because of trying to get, you know, more time of possession, right? They're the ones that want to be out on the field. And I think they will either put themselves in a situation where they're forcing things to happen, or they're, you know, overconfident in what they're doing. Like, I think it's more of a mental game with the other quarterback than it is a physical one, obviously, since they're not actually playing against each other. But, you know, look, I think these two have a tremendous amount of respect for each other. You know, I think Joe Burrow, you know, while he might not be having like the season, you know, of all seasons as a quarterback, the kid's going to be, and I can say that because I'm in my mid-50s now, the kid is going to be a great one. Like, he's going to be a staple of this league forever, you know, for as long as he plays and stays healthy. So, you know, I think he, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, you know, there's a hand, you know, Jalen Hurts now is coming to the forefront of that. I think Justin Herbert, like, I think they're going to be – you know, the future of the NFL for the next 5, 10, 12 years, 15, 20, if they turn into a Tom Brady. But I think they have a lot of respect for each other. And, you know, I think they're going to go into this game with that, regardless of what Justin Reed has said on Twitter. Like, God, these guys, I mean, that was always the biggest thing in the locker room. Like, you'd be like, oh, guys. Like, well, luckily, I didn't have to deal with social media back then. We just actually had print, you know, or you know, you guys would do radio interviews or TV interviews. But they tended to, you know, not be as, you know, not be as bad. But this whole stuff with social media and whatnot, thank goodness us old guys didn't have to deal with that, because I don't know how some of these players deal with it. But going back to that comment about Justin Reed, like, I think for the most part, taking the bulletin board stuff that he's material he's offered, I think the teams have a great amount of respect for each other. I really do.
Talking with Joe Valerio, co-host of the Believe in Chiefs podcast, former offensive lineman with the Kansas City Chiefs. One of the things I want to talk about, and trust me, we will get to some of those comments from Justin Reed and some of the Bengals responses. We'll cue some of those up in just a little bit here. But one of the things, just kind of as we continue to build up and what coming off of the AFC championship game and then kind of what we've seen this year, one of the things that I guess I kind of found surprising, I know Patrick Mahomes is amazing. I know Andy Reid is an amazing coach. They built a good offensive line, but how the Chiefs have seemingly been able to overcome, win a ton of football games without Tyreek Hill. And Tyreek, I understand there's kind of some off the field stuff early in his career. And then obviously the money issue and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I just am still very surprised. I think they would, I still was confident they were going to put up a lot of points. They were going to do a lot of good things on offense, but that is a massive weapon, as you can see what he's done in Miami. And yet the Kansas City Chiefs have seemingly not really skipped much of a beat without him on the field there. I don't know. Walk us through that a little bit and walk us through some of the other weapons and what you've seen from them kind of picking up the slack from Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Anthony. I think what the Chiefs have done is they've diversified the receiving core for sure, right? I mean, they finally have, you know, in MVS, they finally have a back shoulder guy, right? A big, lanky, tall, big guy. Patrick's never really had that other than Travis Kelce, right, as his tight end. You know, I try to categorize some of these receivers into players that, you know, I'm familiar with from the days of old or the recent past even. But, you know, like MVS is definitely more along the lines of a Terrell Owens, you know, kind of a big Randy Moss back shoulder receiver that can go up and make plays. You know, you've got the Juju Smith-Schuster, who's more of the Edelman type, right? He's stocky, he's compact, he's possession-based. You know, Justin Watson, the pickup from Penn, go Quakers, right? Fellow Penn Quaker there, my man Justin. He's got two touchdowns. He's catching the Quaker touchdown record there for the Chiefs. But, you know, they've got guys now that are just different. And, of course, the holdover, who obviously is on IR, so he's not playing this week, but Mecole Hardman is more along the lines of that speedy, you know, going to stretch the field, you know, both horizontally and vertically with his speed. You know, I think it's been a positive. I really have. I think there were a lot of defensive coordinators that were catching on to the Chiefs' scheme. I mean, look at what the Bengals did in the second half of that game, right? I mean, look how they were able to shut that vaunted, you know, speedy receiving core and explosive offensive game plan down. So I think having multiple weapons now to complement what Travis Kelce's always had with Patrick and to keep the addition of the speed, you know, I think Sky Moore is going to fall into that category. You know, Mecole Hardman obviously is in there. I kind of like it. I, you know, watching a lot of football and having, you know, being more offensive minded than even defensive minded. I like the diversification of what they've done. The Achilles heel for the Chiefs is their run game. It's or their lack of, I should say. Look, not everybody's lucky enough to have a Derrick Henry or, you know, a Ezekiel Elliott or, you know, one of those premier running backs that, you know, you can just get 5.5 yards a carry with, you know, when the time is right. And, you know, I think if the Chiefs had somebody like a Priest Holmes or, or somebody like a Derrick Henry or their old, you know, old stable mates of, you know, getting Kareem Hunt or somebody like that back, I think they would be the complete team. I think it's probably the thing that could either cause them, you know, a big speed bump or be their downfall is unless Isaiah Pacheco can be that guy, which look, he wasn't elite coming out of college, but he's making a name for himself as somebody who, you know, I've heard it said that, you know, when he runs with the football, he's trying to hurt the ground. That's how hard he runs. So I'm kind of, I'm waiting to see how that all plays out, but I think that's pretty much their Achilles heel on offense for sure.
I think this matchup is great because you have a Bengals defense that is kind of like an amoeba. It kind of molds based off of what the opposition is for that week. And with the Chiefs offense, like you said, with their receivers, you don't really know where they're going to line up. Like Travis Kelce, 43% of his snaps come from the slot, 30% comes from out wide. The other 25% is as an inline tight end. So when these guys, they're out wide for Mahomes, like where should Bengals fans expect these guys to be aligned as receivers with MBS, Juju, the whole game?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the thing, John. You nailed it, right? I mean, you just don't know where they're going to be. And that's the beauty of Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy's playbook. It's large. It's big. It's got a lot of, chicanery in there, right? From both a formation perspective, motions, the types of plays, you know, who's going to get the ball, where it's going to go. And I think that is, that's something that always has kept people on their toes. Andy must have a very simple yet complex way to teach that playbook. And I think that's what makes it effective. I think there's a lot of very, systematic complications to their offense. It's not probably too, once you get to study the different combinations, it's probably not that hard to put it together as an offensive player, but yet the addition of all those combinations makes it sort of, exponentially more complex, the more patterns and the more formations and motions that you put together. And that's tough on defensive coordinators, right? I mean, the Andy will put in plays. I know he does this for a fact. They'll put plays in preseason, early in the season, when they're ahead, just so other teams have to game plan against it, right? Because, you know, look, time is limited for these teams these days, right? They only have so much time they can practice. They only have so much time they can go full contact. Like time is probably their best friend and their worst enemy all at the same time. And I think what Andy does a good job of is throwing things at defensive coordinators that they have to spend time on. You know, Coach Schottenheimer used to do it in sort of more rudimentary ways when we were playing. He'd always throw some kind of a trick play or a fake in there, because what happens at practice is, you know, you get your scout team, you know, generally it's made up of your backups, practice squad guys. Sometimes if you have injuries, sometimes starters have to be on the scout team, just depending on who's available. And, you know, you'd run scout against your number ones, right, both offensively and defensively. And, you know, you draw the cards up and you only have so many plays that you can do before, you know, practice ends, right? There's only so many hours you can be out there. And so when they're scripting those cards, I always remember, like, you know, when I was running scout team, or if I was on the first team and going against the scout team, like there was always a play that would be on those cards that you'd have to run. That would be some weird play that the other team did six games ago, because the coaches felt like, well, we want the team to be prepared. We want the team to be prepared if Travis lines up at quarterback and Patrick lines up at receiver, and, you know, they put in seven offensive linemen. And I'm telling you, they think about those things, right? Because at practice, there's only so many reps that you can get. And I think that's a really long answer to a short question, but I think that's the kind of stuff that Andy Reid is masterful at, is forcing defensive coordinators to have to put those cards in their script when they're out there on the field, repping scout plays. And I think that's something that, you know, I hope that maybe is a little bit of an insight to your listeners and to your fans, that, you know, as a former player who ran a lot of scout because I was not an everyday starter, you know, I was always looking at these plays like, what play is this? Like, who runs the triple flea flicker, you know, where the you know, guard throws the ball? Like, what is who? Well, the Bengals did that 6 games ago against the Browns, and, you know, we've got to practice it because just in case. And I think that's something that was – that's always going to be a piece of football that, you know, that maybe fans didn't know exist.
Talking with Joe Valerio, former Kansas City Chiefs offensive lineman, current Believe in Chiefs podcast host. You kind of mentioned that a player currently on the Chiefs is catching up to the Penn touchdown reception record. You hold that, don't you?
Right. With one of my all-time boyhood, you know, I'm still a fan, a boyhood idols, Anthony Munoz.
That's right.
Right, yes. Cincinnati Bengal. We hold it together. Yep. And someday I'm going to get to meet him and number 78. And first of all, I can't wait to shake his hand because he literally was one of my all-time favorite players growing up. I love Anthony Munoz. In a small world story, my college strength coach at Penn, bringing that school up again, he was actually very good friends with the strength coach of the Bengals. Huh. And we followed a lot of the Bengals' strength and conditioning mantras and strategies when I was in college. And so I got to know, you know, a lot of, you know, well, first of all, you got Reggie Williams, you know, from Dartmouth, obviously, was mm-hmm. another idol of mine coming out of the Ivy League. But like, I'll never forget my strength coach was absolutely enamored with Tim Crumry. Like he could not stop talking about Tim Crumry. Well, Tim Crumry, when he gets on a leg press, he does 6,000 pounds. I'm like, all right, coach, well, I'm not Tim Crumry, you know, but like he would go out and spend time with the Bengals. And so I've always, growing up in Philadelphia, you know, and going to Penn, I've always had a little bit of an affinity for the Bengals because of that. And, you know, and someday I will get to maybe shake Anthony Munoz's hand and share that story with him that we're co-record holders.
Well, we'll try and get him on again soon. He is as gracious of a guy as you would ever meet. He is an awesome, awesome guy. But why I brought that up is because there's another part to my question, which is some of those touchdown catches, at least I think, came in a tackle eligible type of package from you, correct? Is that usually how?
Okay. Yeah.
I'm just curious from a, because I didn't play offensive line. So I'm just curious about the mindset of an offensive lineman. When you are kind of the extra jumbo package, tackle eligible type of player out there, along with 5 other offensive linemen, is the mindset like, man, this is going to be fun because either I'm catching the football or there's an extra one of us out here and I'm going to mow someone over. I'm curious because the Bengals recently have been running a little bit of that with Hakeem Adeniji as their tackle eligible guy and have been getting some yards out of it. So I guess just from, you know, an offensive lineman perspective, is that just like, hey, this is fun time? Even if you're not the starting offensive lineman, it just seems like the ball's either coming your way or you're going to be a big part of the play that's coming, even if it's on the ground.
Well, Ant, let's go back to the genesis though of people who grew up as offensive linemen. Okay, so when I came home from the little league tryouts when I was like 6 or 7 years old, and I told my dad, who was a professional boxer, he knew enough about football to be dangerous, but you know, he did know a lot of the players and he followed the game a little bit, but he was more of a boxing and baseball guy, and my dad, when I came home from tryouts, I was like, Dad, I'm playing offensive line, because when I was in the backyard, I was always the quarterback, right? In my backyard legend games, you know, I would announce myself as the quarterback, right? When I would throw the ball around to myself, yeah. And so I said to my dad, I said, Dad, I'm going to play offensive line, and that's how when I tried out, you know, and he said, well, that's great, son. I mean, you know, he pointed out to me that it's the only position in all of football where your sole job is to protect other players. All of sports. It's the only position where your job is to protect other players. But I asked him point blank. I said, Dad, when am I going to get my name in the paper? And he said, probably when you jump off sides on fourth down and cost the team the game. And I was like, well, that's not good. And I said, well, Dad, when am I going to get my name on the loudspeaker? And he said, probably when you get a holding penalty. And I was like, wow, like I'm going to have to find some different motivations here to playing this position and being successful at it. Right. So you learn to find joy in helping other people score touchdowns, right? You're at the bottom of a pile. Yeah. You got fingers in your eye, right? You got knees in your back, right? Your face is in the mud. And you hear, Marcus Allen, touchdown. And you're like, okay. Like, you know, it's like, all right. Like, I did that. Like, you know. And so Joe Montana, like, I was always the even in my first and second year before Joe Montana got there, I was always the, we called it the tank tight end, right? So I would come in and be the third tight end. And it was, you know, it was always blocking. I never would go out. But they put in this one play early on when Joe Montana came, when we implemented the West Coast offense in Kansas City, and they put in this play where I would go and be a decoy in the about 5 yards into the end zone. I would stand and put my hands up, and I was basically a human wall, a human screen, right, for the tight end and the H-back or the fullback, whoever was making the crossing route. They would cross behind me, and hopefully I'd, you know, pick somebody off being, you know, 6'5", you know, a biscuit away from 300 pounds, right? So I would stand there, and one day we're at practice, and Joe has got this grin on his face, that Joe Montana devilish grin that he had when he was playing a joke on somebody. And he's staring at me, and he's pumping the ball. And I'm like, dude, don't even think about it. And he's like, he's looking right at me, and I'm like, throw it over there, buddy. And he guns this thing at me, and he fires. Now, I played basketball in high school, and I was a catcher, and I actually thought I was going to play baseball in college, which is a whole nother story. So I have pretty good hands. I, you know, was able to play, you know, pretty competitive high school and maybe even college baseball as a catcher. So I can move my hands around and catch things. And I caught the darn thing. And I'm telling Paul Hackett, like, threw his clipboard up in the air and comes running over. And he's like, Joe, you are going to catch a touchdown this year. And I was like, geez, coach. I was like, this West Coast offense really does open up things when a 300 pound guy is going to be catching touchdowns. I was like, you're kidding me. But we put the play in, and, you know, it was like, it was just like the thing that helped me to kind of answer your question. I'm sorry I went off on that story.
But no, it's good. That's why I asked it to hear this kind of stuff. That's what I wanted.
The thing about it that I think is the most important thing when you get a person in a position that they're not used to playing. And this is, I think this is a lesson that I've learned to take even in my own like professional life or personal life post football, is you have to trust people. Right. And guys like Joe Montana have, when you're prepared, they have a complete and utter trust in their team. And he never looked at, he called the play the first time when we ran it against the Raiders. He called the play literally like I was Jerry Rice. Like, he didn't look at me and try to, like, you know, make sure my hands didn't, you know, have, you know, Vaseline on them or anything from, you know, slicking up my pads, which we used to do, by the way. Don't tell anybody I told you that. They'll take away, put asterisks next to all of our wins. We used to put Vaseline on our pads so the defensive lineman couldn't grab our shoulder pads.
There you go.
So, you know, he didn't act like I was a 300-pound buffoon, you know, who was going to be hopefully not drop the thing. He called the play. We went up and we ran it. Like, it was amazing. And I'm telling you, that's what helped me each time, because he had utter complete confidence in all of his players. And if he would have looked at me and he would have kind of, if there would have been one even iota of doubt in his mind or in his eyes when he called the play, when he looked at me, I probably would have dropped him. You know what I mean? But he didn't. And I think that's the thing, you know, for offensive linemen to be able to hear your name called for doing something good, it was really special. I got to be honest. But it did cost me a lot, because I used to have to take the offensive line and the quarterbacks and tight ends out for dinner after each touchdown. So I spent a lot of my game check, because we had a fine board in the line room where, you know, if you got your name in the paper or you had an interview, we would charge each other fines, and we would fund a big offensive line party at the end of the year, karaoke, whatever we needed to do. And I funded a lot of dinners on those touchdowns. So it was definitely worth it. You can see, I got the ball. If, you know, for those who can see the video, I got the Montana balls are right behind me.
Oh, there you go.
Yep. Those brown ones up in the top shelf there. Those are the, and then one Steve Bono from the Arizona game. But the three Joe balls are there. And you know, I made sure Alan Wright, who's my hero, made sure that as soon as I had those balls in my hand, he ran out onto the field and grabbed it from me so he could save it for me. So
that's awesome.
He was my hero. But anyway, that was a long story. Thanks for indulging me in that.
Of course.
Good stuff.
Now we learned a lot. Former Kansas City Chief and now admitted cheater, dirty cheater, Joe Valerio.
Yes. Now watch this, right? So somebody from the Bengals is going to call out one of the Chiefs' offensive linemen for having like silicone or Vaseline on their shoulder past this week, and it'll like cost them the game, and he'll be coming after me.
Joe, it's time for some light trivia here. I'm gonna name you a stat line, and you're gonna tell me which of these two players the stat line belongs to. Now, this came from weeks 8 and 9 of this season, right after Ja'Marr Chase exited the lineup with a hip injury. So we have a stat line of 11 receptions for 90 yards and a touchdown. Now, which of the Bengals receivers does the stat line belong to? Hayden Hurst or T. Higgins?
Hayden Hurst?
Wrong. It was actually Joe Mixon. So none of the Chiefs media knows the difference between these two players, apparently.
Listen, it was supposed to be multiple choice.
You should have watched the film, man. I don't know.
I know the fans have to be happy he's back, though. I know they have to be happy he's back.
But yeah, like, Pirine's played pretty well in his absence. But yeah, I mean, I think all hands on deck is always good.
Yeah.
Can we talk about this, though? Can we talk about what the hell just happened with Justin Reed? It feels like he got set up a little bit by the report.
Hold on. Can I cue it up? Can I play it here? All right, let's cue it up. Hopefully everybody can see this in just a second. It's going to be really classy because I'm pulling up the video straight off of Twitter here, so you're going to get a lot of ancillary stuff on the side, but that's all right. It's the video itself. Hopefully everybody can hear it. Let's play it. I think this is the one.
A big time tackle, like some of the missed tackles, explosive plays. A lot of it's going to come down to making the play on the ball, you know. And they have 88 Higby. No, it's not. It's not Higby with the Rams. What's his name? It is Higgins. It's Higgins. Higby and Higgins. They're going to have him back. He's a very talented receiver too. More of a finesse type of guy. Not the best blocker. I'm going to lock him down, you know, straight up. So, you know, we're going to have to come on the game. Like I said, play our best game and go out and do it.
So let me share a response that came out today. That was from Fox 4 Kansas City. And this is Hayden Hurst, not Tyler Higbee, Hayden Hurst.
Yeah.
And I actually don't know if he swears in this one. If he does, I apologize. So everybody plug your ears if you're listening later on or whatever. He may say a little dirty word here. I don't know. But Ben Baby of ESPN, who covers the Bengals, here's Hayden Hurst's response.
I don't know. I mean, you could pick anybody in this locker room, but you know, I feel like I'm the last person you probably want to talk shit about because I have a long memory. I don't know.
So there you go. Hayden Hurst's response. Go ahead, John. Ask your question now that the video is queued up.
Well, for starters, I do feel like that reporter set him up because I don't feel like Reed was like, he wasn't trying to mess up there. Like it was, is it Higbee? No, he was thinking of a last name with H, and then the reporter said Higgins for whatever reason because it sounds like Higbee. And then Justin Reed kind of ran with it. But my question for Joe is, regardless if it's quote unquote bullet board material, like it's not a bad thing for these players to have like the comments like, I'm going to lock him up. Regardless if he got the name wrong, like it's not a bad thing necessarily to have that kind of bravado, I guess, when you're going up in a big time matchup, right?
No, you want your teammates to have the confidence, right? There's a fine line between arrogance, cockiness, and confidence, right? And I remember when Patrick Mahomes, said, listen, we're going to go out and we're going to win 20 games this year. Well, what would you want him to say? Do you want him to say, hey, you know what? Maybe if we win like 14 and lose 6, like things will be all right. Like, no, you want to win every game. Like, So there's a big difference between confidence and arrogance. And I shouldn't say there's a big difference. It's actually a fine line. But what do you want him to say? No, I think he's going to beat me like 3 times and they're going to come out and beat him. Like, It's good to have this kind of stuff. I think after watching some of the other things that have gone back and forth on social media between everybody, it doesn't seem as dramatic, I think, as people might think it is. You know, now when players come out and they, you know, there's also a fine line between, you know, having a good ribbing and having creating a little bit of rivalry with that kind of confidence. Maybe it's bordering on cockiness, you know, to where you get to the point where it's insulting, right? Where if you're saying that somebody's not prepared or they're, you know, less than performing at their best. I mean, you know, I think it can take a really bad turn if you're not careful with those kind of comments and the tweets and all those things. So I think this is probably a little bit more blown out of proportion than it is. If I were a player, you know, I just, the one thing I think is frustrating, but seriously, you know, not to backtrack, but about Justin Reed. I mean, he probably should know the players pretty much inside and out. I mean, because, you know, you get a playbook, you know, on Tuesday, right? You get a playbook and it's going to have the depth chart in it. And I'm assuming everything is electronic these days. You know, we used to actually get an actually photocopied playbook, a game day playbook, inserts and everything. And the first page was always the depth chart. It was always a lineup of the players that you were going to be playing against, the whole team, and then, of course, the first thing you're looking at is the 1, 2, and 3 deep of the player that you're going against, right? So I knew that, you know, when we were playing the Raiders, I wasn't going to be like, yeah, what's that guy's name? Howie Short? No, Howie Long, right? Like, no. I knew exactly who I was blocking in that game, and I knew every lineman on the line. I knew what their best moves were, you know, and how they use their hands and what their alignment looked like and when they were in cover 2 and when they were going to blitz and their blitz packages. So I'm a little disappointed that he didn't know the names because, you know, this is a team that this is the third time they're meeting in 2 years, right? So, So, I mean, I am a little disappointed with Justin in that. And he didn't, because that I think was more of the bulletin board material saying that he was just going to lock somebody down. Of course, he's going to say he's going to lock somebody down. What do you want him to say? No, I want him to beat me. So,
yeah, I think that was probably a little bit more where there was some issue being taken, which is like, you know, you're not even, you know, you're going to lock down players that you don't even really know the names of at that. But at any rate, I guess, you know, there's a lot of other stuff we want to get to, maybe a little X's and O's and predictions and whatnot. Mm-hmm. If you've got a little time.
I got it, man. Let's do it.
All right. I would love to keep chatting with you. But just to kind of piggyback off of that, I don't want to overstep or overstate or use hyperbole too much here. But, you know, the last handful of games that these two teams played, the two last year, you know, you can go all the way back to 2003 when the Bengals beat them, and that's when the Bengals kind of arrived under Marvin Lewis and the Chiefs weren't defeated and they came to Cincinnati. There's a lot of big games, big storylines, mm-hmm. sometimes heartbreak, especially on the Kansas City Chiefs side. Now you've got these comments by Justin Reed, the response by Hurst and Higgins. You've got Carlos Dunlap, who left Cincinnati, now on the Chiefs, and he left Cincinnati very unceremoniously a couple of years ago. That didn't go that great. And then, of course, the bad taste in the mouth from the two losses last year. I mean, is this kind of bordering on, I don't know, like divisional rivalry type of stuff? I mean, there's also Juju Smith-Schuster, who came from the Steelers. There's some bad blood there with him and the Bengals from his. I don't know. I'm just kind of trying to connect some dots here. And it's like, there's a lot of emotion, it seems, going into this game and these two teams going against each other.
Oh God, yeah, Anthony, you're spot on, man. I mean, this is definitely becoming a pretty amazing rivalry. I mean, I'm thinking, and seriously, not just because we're talking and we're getting ready for this Bengals game, Bengals Chiefs game, but I think it's better than any rivalry that the Chiefs have in their own division at this point. Wow. I mean, wow. It's a disaster. You know, the AFC West. I went into this season. Just to, you know, not to go off on a tangent, but I went into this season so pumped about the AFC West.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's back. You know, it's back to the days of Elway and Montana and Derek Thomas and all those great Christian Okoye, all those AFC West rivalries that we had back in the 90s and even into the 2000s, right? Peyton Manning. And it was just like, it's been such a busted balloon. like the only thing we really have going in the AFC West right now really is with the Chargers. You know, the Raiders are an absolute disaster. Can't even, we could have a whole podcast on what is going on in Denver. And you know, so when you look at it that way, you know, even though the, you know, the Raiders still, it's Chiefs Raiders and they always talk about Raider week, blah, blah, blah. But you're absolutely right, man. This is going to be one of the games, two of the teams that are just their fate just keeps finding a way to get them together in really good games. And in a very, exciting way. I'm thinking right now when I think about the Chiefs and the games that I look most forward to, I'd have to say it's this game, the Bengals, based on the history, right? I mean, they seem to have the Chiefs number. They kept them from going to the Super Bowl, got the Bengals back in the big game. Like, how cool is that? You got this young buck, Joe Burrow, who's a statuesque, you know, quarterback. He kind of reminds me of those quarterbacks of old. You know, he's 6'4". He's a big dude. He takes hits. He stands in the pocket. It's kind of like, you know, goes back to those Marino, Elway type days, right?
Yeah.
I love it. And I think between the Bengals and the Bills, that's where I see the Chiefs kind of like, you know, kind of signing their paychecks at this point, really, if you think about it. Those are the games that have really caused a lot of stir, I think. And I think this game is going to be one of them. And I think as long as both of these teams keep finding a way to improve in the draft and they keep finding a way to improve both strategically and by their systems, that it's going to be a rivalry that's only going to get better. I think it's, you know, the only thing that would really, you know, maybe get in the way is injury. Because what I'm really excited about going into this game is that the Bengals are back on track, right? I think I was a little concerned there for a while before, you know, what is it, three straight they've won? Like, I was a little concerned that if they didn't pull out one or two of these games, that this game wasn't going to be as meaningful for the Chiefs. Because if you look at the rest of their schedule, it's actually pretty weak. I think I saw an infographic on ESPN not too long ago that the Chiefs have the weakest schedule for the remainder of the season. And it's like by a big margin. Like, it's not even close how far down their schedule is compared to everybody else's. And that can actually be a bad thing, I think. I think you can get into a lull going into the playoffs. So I'm glad that this game is going to be what it's being hyped to be, and that there's a little bit of that, you know, kind of bulletin board stuff flying around. That the Bengals are playing better, that they're healthy. Like, I'm so excited they're healthy because I'm the type of guy, and when I was coaching high school football, I always used to tell the kids, like, you want to play in the big games, like you want to beat the teams at their best. You don't want to play a team where they don't have their quarterback or their star receiver or their best middle linebacker. Like, you want to beat the team at their best. And that's kind of like what I'm excited about this game, that everybody's back. If anything, the Chiefs are a little bit of a disadvantage, you know, having a couple of guys out. But all in all, I think, I think the teams are going in relatively full strength.
Yeah, so we see here from Dan the Man, Chiefs play the Bengals, the Broncos, the Texans, but I mean, Seattle is a pretty decent out right now, and then Denver again.
Yeah, it's
three bye weeks.
It's brutal. I was like, Dan, my hat's off to you, man. That's a great commentary. So I am kind of excited that this game is happening right now, because this is going to get both teams ready for the playoffs. So kind of, you know, looking forward to seeing how it all shakes out.
Well, Joe, we want to get a question from a very loyal listener by the name of Mr. Whisper, who donated $10 directly to the David Pollack Family Foundation. So thank you, Mr. Whisper, again. But he's asking about the defense a little bit. What is your opinion on the Chiefs secondary now that, you know, Tyrann Mathieu and Chardavius Ward are out of the picture? How do they stack up against this Bengals passing attack now with Jamar Chase back in the picture?
I like them. I like them better. I think, look, getting rid of Tyrann Mathieu and, or not get rid of him, but him exiting the scene, you know, was tough because he was a vocal leader. He was a tough player. we kind of watch him right now, and it was a flail though for a while for him. Wasn't as bad as, you know, Russell Wilson, but he wasn't, you know, he really wasn't playing as well, and could have been, you know, Steve Spagnuolo's scheme that was making him shine in this, you know, in this defense that Steve Spagnuolo has put together. But, you know, look, I think the world of this kid, Trent McDuffie. I think he's going to be a star. I really do. I think that was a huge improvement there. You know, I think, you know, look, as bad as this whole bulletin board thing might turn out to be, because time will tell. But I think Justin Reed is having a really nice season. I think he plays well against the run. He comes up and makes plays. He's not afraid to stick his nose in there, but he also has, you know, the wherewithal and the speed and the skill still at his age to make plays. You know, I think L'Jarius Sneed has gotten better, not only every season, but every game. He gets a little bit better. And I think Juan Thornhill is, you know, a solid, right? The thing that this defense is, to sort of kind of round out the answer to the question, is not just the secondary. It's made up of a lot of B-plus players, right? I mean, short of Chris Jones, you know, who's, look, the guy's, he's on fire right now. And the reason why he's on fire is he's playing like a team player. And for the not the first time in his career, but consistently this year, he has given up it being all about Chris Jones, and he is being a disciplined pass rusher. He is he's thinking about his teammates. He's absorbing two and three linemen in the run game, and leaving some open lanes for the linebackers to make plays. And I really think that is kind of the embodiment of this whole defense. So want to keep on your question about the defensive secondary is they're not, you know, there's not a super, you know, first ballot Pro Bowl Hall of Famer right now back there, but man, they're playing like a team. And I think that's been Steve Spagnuolo's best thing that he's done with this team, is he's put everybody in the right position to succeed. He hasn't left anybody out on an island, and I don't know. There's a lot of arguments you could say about that. Is it better to have, you know, more A players and round it out with other players? I'm a big believer that football is the ultimate team sport, and you've got. I'd rather have, you know, a lot of Bs and As and B pluses and A minuses and even like maybe that one C in there than have like 9 A players and a D. Because that D is going to come back and kill you, or that C minus player is going to come back and it's going to bite you. So anyway, I know it's a long question about the or a long answer about the D backs, but I can tell you, you know, the fact that Jamar Chase is back, you know, I really think the world of this receiving core. I think they're as diverse as the Chiefs' receiving core, and I think if Joe Burrow, you know, if he has the time like he had in the second half of that last game the Chiefs played, he's going to be able to do some things, you know, with this core, receiving core that he has, because they're, like I said, they're like the Chiefs, they're diversified, right? I mean, last year in fantasy, I had Tyler Boyd as one of my receivers. And, you know, I think that's probably going to be one of the key matchups that I'm going to watch in this game. Is I'm going to watch how Joe Burrow approaches this receiving core's ability to get open against this defensive backfield. You know, what are going to be the routes? Are they going to flood? Are they going to try to pick on one guy? You know, are they going to stretch the field horizontally? Are they going to stretch it vertically? Like what's Joe's game plan, and what's the offensive coordinator's game plan going to be against this backfield? The next kind of matchup that I think I really am excited to see staying on that side of the ball is I'm really anxious to see if they can get to Joe Burrow in a different way, right? I think they need to rush him a little bit differently. I think he's the kind of quarterback that you need to discipline rush up the middle. Certainly if you can get your defensive ends to to get around the tackles fast, fine. But I think they're going to have to keep him in the pocket, but get the pressure from the middle. And I think that's what, you know, Chris Jones has been doing. So that's the second matchup that I'm going to watch in this game is the Chiefs not allowing Joe Burrow to find the pocket within the pocket. That's what I like to call it. When, you know, when you get undisciplined in your pass rush, you create these seams for quarterbacks. And that is what Patrick Mahomes does magically, right? He has an uncanny way of finding the pocket within the pocket. And so the best way to rush him, I think, is the same way you want to rush Joe Burrow and the way that you want to rush it like a Josh Allen.
Talk with Joe Valerio, former Kansas City Chiefs offensive lineman, current Believe in Chiefs podcast host. Before we kind of get your predictions and start wrapping up, Joe, I don't know how much you have paid attention to this Bengals rebuilt offensive line, because that Titans game, I think, last year was kind of the big catalyst to this team saying, regardless of how the rest of the postseason plays out, we got to make some changes. And they did. Four new starters on the offensive line for the Bengals. Given that you are and played offensive line in the NFL, I would love to get your assessment of the new group of the Cincinnati Bengals, what you've seen there, and maybe how they stack up, hopefully in a better way than even last year when they stepped up and played well in the second half of the AFC Championship game.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're obviously grading out very, very well. You know, when you look at the they got all these stats now, right? My God, it's crazy the kind of stats that they keep. You know, I mean, back when I was playing in the 90s, it was like, you know, rushing yards, passing yards. You know, now they're, you know, it's crazy. But yeah, but they're grading out extremely well. The Lael Collins pickup was fantastic, right? And the Chiefs did this. You know, the same thing when they struggled. You know, that year that they had the almost, I would call it an embarrassment in the Super Bowl. You know, what I think general managers and head coaches learn very early on, or not early on, but they learn in a dramatic way, I should say, when you don't have things up front working, it's nothing's going to work. Right. Yeah. And, yeah. You know, if you can't create a little bit of time and space for your quarterback, if you can't get an offensive line that works together well, chemistry wise, that running backs don't pick the hole that the running back's going to run in. You want the running back to have a couple of ways to go. And what I'm seeing, especially in the pass protection has been great, right? Joe has gotten, you know, I don't think, unless something dramatic happens, I don't think we're going to see another Titans debacle like we saw, just based on the history of these last, you know, 11 games and where this line has played and how they've demonstrated their success. So I think Bengals fans can feel, you know, very comfortable that you're not going to see a debacle like that. You know, could Steve Spagnuolo, you know, throw a blitz in here and there that could cause Joe Burrow some angst? You know, that's what he's probably going to try to do. Could Chris Jones create a little havoc if, you know, they can find a way to get him singled up? You know, that's what I think Bengals fans should be looking for, is how often can they slide the protection to Chris Jones? How often can they make him the one that's getting the double team in pass protection, as opposed to having him singled up against the guard? Because if you go back and watch him, when he's singled up against the guard, he's winning every time. Like it's been actually silly, even against some really good some guards, Pro Bowl type offensive guards. So that's something that I think Bengals fans should really look out for, is how will the Bengals coaching staff adjust to making sure that they're sliding the protection to Chris Jones and that they're getting that extra lineman on him. To bump off, you know, when the protection is going that direction. So that's going to be, I think that's going to be critical. And then the other thing, you know, you want to look for is, you know, Joe Mixon's the kind of running back that, you know, he needs to have two ways to go, right? He's not Earl Campbell, you know, he's not Christian Okoye, where, you know, Christian Okoye used to run us over. as offensive linemen. Like we used to wear pads on the back of our triceps called Christian pads because he would run into us and you'd have these bruises all on the back of your arms. And you're like, why Christian, can you see me? Like, you know, I'm wearing red and I'm 300 pounds. Like, but you know, when he was going downhill, he was going downhill. But with that, like what this Bengals line is doing is they're finding ways to get their hips together, and they're doing a great job of blocking the next level with the defensive lineman's butt, I call it, right? So picture two guys getting together, right, and pushing a defensive lineman together, right? Because now you got 600 pounds of dude going against 300 pounds, right? So that works, and they're working together. And they're pushing that lineman into the linebacker. And that then gives guys like Joe Mixon two lanes to go. Cut left, he can cut right, because they're not dictating where they're not sticking their butts into the hole and kind of telling the running back where to go. They're not, we used to call that like position blocking, or sometimes we call it like butt blocking, where you just like you're positioning yourself around the defensive lineman. So, you know, you're dictating where the running back's gonna go. That's what they're not doing. And I think that's why they've had, you know, really so much success in the run game, and why, you know, I think why Joe Mixon's been successful and you know, and why he's averaging, you know, 3.8 yards a carry. That's a great average when your longest is only 31. Okay. He's only got one big run to throw off, you know, the average. So I like the way that he's running the ball. So yeah, really, really, I think, you know, to answer the question, it was a lot of words. I think this offensive line rebuilt is really coming together for four starters new. I mean, you know, hats off to the coaching staff for getting the chemistry together so quickly.
Yeah. I mean, if Chris Jones sacks Burrow maybe once or twice more in that championship game, maybe that game goes a different way. So, Joe Valerio, is that how you see this game going down? Is Chris Jones going to get to Burrow one more time, or are the Chiefs going to get this win?
Yeah, this is a good one. You know, I don't want to come off as like a Chiefs homer. I do really truly like to be objective. And like I've said, I have predicted losses before for the Chiefs, even though I follow them, cover them, play for them. I know that this game is going to be very close, or at least I can feel it in my heart and my brain that this game is going to be really close. I think it's going to be a 3-point game. I think there's going to be enough emotion on the Chiefs side that they are going to prevail. But I think it's going to be like, maybe this is, I don't know, maybe some people consider this high scoring or medium scoring. I don't know. I think it's going to be like 30-27. I think the Chiefs will kick a field goal and put them ahead. And I just, that's kind of the way I see it going. Emperor Starscream. I know that's just, I love that. You know, everyone's picking them there. But I just have a feeling that's the way it's going to go. And you know what, with those kind of 3-point games, it can go either way. So, you know, I always throw that out there when you're making predictions that, you know, when you're predicting someone to win by three, you're almost saying, it's almost like a toss up, right? Because it can one, like you said, one more Chris Jones sack. Listen, the Chiefs don't get it right in special teams. They better get it right, because they're really struggling in special teams right now. And it's not just Sky Moore dropping punts. Their entire special teams, they don't have the right chemistry. They don't have the right guys rounding out the special teams roster. And as you know, you know, 20% of the players on the team make 80% of the money, right? In round numbers, right? Pareto's law at this point. And the problem is with the salary cap, you know, debacle is that, you give all these players, you know, you give Patrick Mahomes $500 million and you've got to round your roster out with league minimum rookies and second year players. Because when you get to 4 years, you know, there's a huge jump in the minimum salary that you have to give players these days. So you don't have those 4, 5, 8 year veterans on special teams like you used to, where, you know, they're going to be very consistent. And the Chiefs are kind of, for some reason, have struggled with finding that right balance in special teams. So, you know, again, one special team snafu and it's 33-30 Bengals win, you know? I mean, so it can go either way. I guess I'd have to pick the Chiefs, just covering them and knowing what I know about how they're rolling right now and how they're playing and how their defense is really coming along. I mean, their offense is, you know, while it didn't look like they could get the ball in the end zone against the Rams in the last game, they still are pretty powerful, especially between the 20s. So that's what I'm thinking, but I think it could go either way too.
Fair enough. I don't want to say if there are two things I am certain of, but I would say there are two things that I would feel pretty confident in saying, and that is, number one, if the Chiefs do get up somewhat big at the half based on what happened last year, the Bengals mm-hmm. will make a game of it regardless of what ends up being the outcome. And number two, this could very well be another playoff preview in this year's bracket as well, again, regardless of the outcome. But Joe, thank you so much for all of your time. Before we get you out of here, you got to tell us about your show. Tell us what you're up to, the Believe in Chiefs podcast, where and when people can find it, and where Bengals fans can maybe scream at you, at least for this week, on videos and all that kind of stuff. And, of course, Twitter handle, all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, it's my Twitter handle's at JoeValerio73. The Believe in Chiefs podcast, if you just, you know, it's a kind of an odd spelling, B-L-E-A-V, but it is pronounced Believe. It's the Believe Podcast Network. It's my podcast partner, Jeff Vedotin, who is a Kansas City native, who writes for Forbes magazine, covers the Chiefs. You know, we do it weekly. I think we're up on like our 162nd episode. So we're having a blast doing it each week. And, you know, it's the Chiefs, but, you know, we talk about a lot of things. We talk about offensive line play. You know, we get guests on, you know, from the media, we get former players on. So it's more than just, you know, it's not all Chiefs all the time. But we have a blast with it. It's really fun to, you know, offer up some funny stories and things that might just be a little bit insightful, you know, about what it was like to play and to have some of those experiences. So it's a blast to join you, Anthony and John. So much fun. You guys do such a great job with the production. Again, apologies for the audio difficulties there at the beginning. You know, it was a long day at work. And, you know, so all my equipment was failing after a long day at work. So.
I appreciate it. And I mean, you're seeing all the compliments from our live listeners. You know, I appreciate you making so much. And we wanted to make sure we gave you an entire episode, sir, because last time you took us to school and I felt like you were drawing stuff up on the chalkboard with us basically and teaching us a lot, telling us a lot. And we appreciate the insight. Like I said, hopefully this is a preview of a matchup to come in the postseason. And if and when it is, we would love to have you back on the show and chat more if you're willing and able.
I would love to, guys. Always a pleasure. And yeah, enjoy the game. It's going to be a great one. You know, I think it's going to be a great game. So get the popcorn out, get the chips and salsa, and you know, let's see how this all turns out. I think it's not only a preview maybe of what's happening in January, but a preview of might be happening for the next decade. Right.
Yeah, if
as these two teams continue to develop and build their teams around these two fine quarterbacks. So fun stuff.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you guys. I hope so.
All right. That was Joe Valerio of the Believe in Chiefs podcast. What a great guy. Love that guy. You know, just always brings it, always brings the enthusiasm, the knowledge, all that stuff, John. We wanted to make sure that we gave him a full episode because, you know, 15-20 minutes with Joe would not do it justice.
No, that's the question, man. That's just one question for him. So, yeah.
I love it. I love it. Well, everybody, we will see you soon. Are we doing listener questions tomorrow, John? I don't know. I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, why not?
All right. Well, we'll try and carve out some time for listener questions live if you haven't gotten sick of it. I should have told Joe this, but unfortunately he just took off. But this is like our, at least on the YouTube channel, this is our 1,001st video or a 1,000th video on the YouTube. Yeah, so kind of should have told Joe that to make him feel a little extra special there. But regardless, we appreciate everybody hanging with us for that long. I guess that's showing how old we are at this point in time. But that's where we are, John. We are in the four digits in terms of content, overall content on the channel.
No joke, dude. I legit went back a couple days ago and watched some of the early videos. We're going all the way back to 2018. We're talking like
Google Hangouts.
We're talking like Tyler Eifert in training camp injuries and Google Hangouts when you can only see one face at a time based off of who's talking. So quite the growth this show has taken, mainly thanks to you. So
no, thanks to you, my friend. But and thanks to the listeners for hanging with us for that long and all the new ones. Hey, by the way, he doesn't have his own channel, but he was gracious enough to allow us to put it on our channel. Drew Garrison of Cincy Jungle had a pretty fun interview with Ted Karras. It was about 15 minutes or so. Really cool. And obviously you get the idea of how great of a guy he is. So go check that out on our Cincy Jungle podcast channel, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, all of the major ones. And of course, our YouTube channel. It's all there for you. There's also a write-up on Cincy Jungle, and then go get yourself a Cincy hat, thecincyhat.com. It benefits the Merici Village, which helps adults with developmental disabilities in all kinds of different ways. So really cool thing that he is just jumping in, not only with being a fan favorite, John, but, doing things for the community right away, being a new Bengal.
Phenomenal interview that Drew did with Ted, and you get the whole insight on his Cincy hats and everything else that you could possibly want with Ted Karras. So definitely check that out.
All right, well, take care, everybody. We'll be back with more and a big one on tap this Sunday. Hopefully you enjoy it. Take care.